This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Movie time. Mark Kermode's on holiday. Andrew Collins is here. We bumped into each other at the X-Files I Want to Believe screening. One of the movies we'll be talking about today, along with Man and Wire. We have Cass, Love Guru, with Mike Myers, and also Albano Del Papa. But first, let's do the UK box office top 10. I'm already starting to get some emails here, Andrew, and texts.
We haven't even said hello, Colin.
You know what? You don't need it in this show. It's unbelievable. You can't see. There's got to be rainforest issues with the amount of people emailing text during the films. Okay, UK box office top 10. Let's go through it. At number 10, Baby Mama.
Baby Mama. That is Tina Fey, who you may or may not have seen in the sitcom 30 Rock, which people seem to like very much. She's Saturday Night Live person, and in this she plays the character that you see in many films, the businesswoman who has it all except hasn't got a baby and is infertile, so she gets a prostitute to have the baby for her, and the prostitute moves in. It's all crazy stuff
and uncle's mad. Usually it's not a baby thing, is it? It's usually I have no love.
Well, she's certainly single.
Yeah.
And she can't have a baby, so she has a baby with a prostitute.
Mm.
Who lives in her house. It's just the usual stuff that happens in comedy films. Exactly. Tina Fey's a fine comedian. I nearly said comedian. That's actually patronising, isn't it? Comedian. If you like her, you might like this. And if you like kind of films about babies, some people like those kind
and
of
prostitutes.
Films. Yeah.
Okay. At number 9, The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian. Kermode said I was wrong to dismiss it and to go and see it. I haven't yet.
You don't want to see any film with the word Chronicles in the title, do you? That's your main problem with it. It's mainly with the one word in the title. I understand that. And we all have those kind of weird problems. And you've got a block and you can't get over that. And I don't blame you. This is a book that was read to me when I was at school, so it means a great deal to me. Mm. So if I go and see it, it'll sort of spoil it, really. I kind of liked it as it was, being read to by the teacher.
That's the problem.
Making it up in your head. That's what I like.
So even though there it is, number 9 in the UK box office top 10,
still there.
An esteemed critic, Andrew Collins, will refuse to go and see it because the childhood memory is just there. It can't be touched.
I don't
it
want to spoil it, but it's marvellous that these kind of quite literary books are being made into massively popular films for kids. I think it's more wholesome for kids to go and see this than a lot of other rubbish that's aimed at them.
On that subject, at number 8, people are still flocking in to see Meet Dave.
Meet Dave, why is this in the charts? Why haven't we seen through Eddie Murphy yet? He's lost his mojo, Eddie Murphy. There'd be a good film to be made about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he lost his mojo. He used to be brilliant, and then he started to play too many parts in his films, and now he plays 100 Eddie Murphys working in a big Eddie Murphy, which is a spaceship. And this is an idea that goes back to comics. You know, I used to read a comic that had a strip called The Numbskulls in it when I was a kid. I think it was in Beezer in the 1970s, and that was about little people working inside a man's head. So that's basically where this has come from. It's a very old idea. But yeah, Eddie Murphy just needs to have a long holiday, and maybe he'll come back brilliant. You know, it could happen.
Play one character for a start. How about that?
Yeah, do that. Less Eddie Murphys in the film will be good. Back down to the old one. I liked one.
What about a serious character?
Yeah, he can do serious acting.
Let's move on. Number 7, Journey to the Centre, spelt wrong but right, actually, of the Earth.
Why right? Well, right in that it's an American film. Yeah, Pearl Harbor was spelt Pearl Harbor.
Shall we move on to 6, Kung Fu Panda?
Yeah, Kung Fu Panda is Jack Black playing a panda in
the latest
computer animation film. He plays a slacker panda, of course, because he's incapable of playing any other kind of human being. Never mind bear. The voice cast is just ridiculous. Dustin Hoffman, Angelina Jolie, Ian McShane, Jackie Chan. It just goes on and on. When I was a kid, cartoons used to have people you'd never heard of doing the voices. Not anymore.
Will Smith, the lure of the Smith, Fresh Prince, keeps it in the top 5.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's actually very good in this. He's quite a broad actor. He's unlike Eddie Murphy, who is essentially a comedian. Will Smith sort of turned himself into a proper actor, and he plays a slacker. He's a slacker in this. He's a slacker superhero who keeps knocking things over while saving people. Not really that into it. And they kind of rehabilitate him, basically, for PR reasons.
Okay, number 4. We were talking about it last week in the show. Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging, just released. So this is its first time, isn't it, in the top 10?
And it's done very well, and it's got a tailor-made audience, which is young teenage girls. It's based on a novel, which is already successful among that particular demographic, and that's who it's aimed at. It's, if you're interested in the mind of a 14-year-old girl, which is what this is about, and the first stages of snogging, then you must go. Well, you've probably already been.
Given the amount of cheesy big A-list movies out at the moment, this film came out the same day as Dark Knight. right? Yeah. How good a performance is that when you put that all
that's
into perspective?
Bad. I mean, that's effectively everybody who doesn't want to see The Dark Knight, pretty much, isn't it? Because, you know, and they've all gone to see that instead. In fact, if you got the top four, which we're about to do the other three, you've got pretty much all cinema going in four films.
That much of a gulf.
Yeah, hardly anyone has been to see all four, but most people have been to see one out of the four.
Okay, then, at number three, it's Wall-E.
Wall-E, which I went to see. Very interesting, because behind me were some 14-year-old boys who wouldn't want to see Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging, obviously, or Mamma Mia, but they might see The Dark Knight. They didn't like Wall-E. They were kind of making wisecracks there. You know how boys are, teenage boys? They sit far apart and talk to each other in normal voices.
We're getting that a lot. Mark Fraser said, Dear Snow Patrol and Reindeer Section, I took my 6-year-old daughter and 3-year-old son to the cinema this week. My girl has been to the pictures before, but this was my boy's first time. What a moment. What was your first time?
Yeah.
What was your first time, Andrew?
Mine was Jungle Book.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful stuff. Mine was Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
See, you've got to have a Disney film. And this is a Disney film. It's the new wave of Disney films.
Well, he says, I chose Wall-E as they love the big animated movies when we watch them at home on DVD. Given Pixar's track record of producing, almost without exception, excellent children's films that don't pander to adults in such a way as they detract from the children's enjoyment, Shark Tale, Much of Shrek, etc. Yeah. I was expecting this to be no different. How disappointing it was then to discover that Pixar have made a film in Wall-E that isn't aimed at children at all. It was not surprising that my children got restless and bored watching the film that has virtually no dialogue for the first half, not a single character they can relate to, and lacks a story arc that they can understand.
It is about tin cans, you know, it's about a little robot and a kind of flying iPod girl who he falls in love with. So yeah, and there's no talking in it. This is why people are saying it's almost like, you know, the great silent movies.
Well, Ed Lewis says, I didn't do the uni thing, but dear Kevin and Perry, I thoroughly enjoyed Wall-E, and of course listening to The Good Doctor's review. I like to listen to Mark's reviews after seeing the films so that I can make up my mind on whether or not I enjoyed it and then have my opinion corrected or confirmed. So we listened to Mark's review of Wall-E with interest, particularly when he was comparing it to Silent Running, but was very surprised when he didn't mention another film that has no dialogue for the first 20 minutes. Surely Wall-E is There Will Be Blood for kids.
Yeah, another, that it is. There Will Be Blood. It sends out a nice message to the kids, which is don't leave a lot of litter around and think about the environment. But this is, of course, as someone has said, an anti-consumerist film made by the Walt Disney Corporation.
We've got Dorothy Gilbert as well, who says, I've just been to see Wall-E, and the little robot reminded me, above all, of the little strange machine Wallace and Gromit find when they go to the moon in A Grand Day Out.
Yeah, that's not bad, actually. It's kind of old-fashioned. I thought it was really good, but I think there's going to be a massive amount of people who aren't going to enjoy it as much as an adult.
What do you think of the names we've been called so far? It's not too bad, nothing too
reindeer
offensive.
Section is one that not many people are going to get.
Yeah, who's first and second? We have to get that.
Well, you obviously first, aren't you?
So you
can be Snow Patrol, I don't mind that.
We'll have to see what happens.
You have to talk really slowly.
Also at number two then, Mamma Mia, right. It's so bad it's good.
Haven't seen it, don't want to see it, will never see it. I don't normally say that, it's a slight dereliction of professional duty, but I've heard a radio ad for this film, and in it, a woman who is presumably real, interviewed outside the cinema, says, I sang and danced all the way through. I don't want to go and see a film where people are dancing. Human beings are dancing in the aisles. I don't want to see that. That's not what cinemas are for. Cinemas are for sitting and watching the film. Watch dancing on the screen, but don't dance.
At the moment, we're doing the UK box office top 10. Let's see if we can go and get Dark Knight out of the way at least. It's at number one, very predictably.
It's made over $300 million in America. It's taken £11 million here, which is half of what Mamma Mia has taken. You know, just in a week it did that. So it's clearly massive. And, you know, and people in New York were queuing up, you know, sleeping on the sidewalk, as they would call it, in order to see this film the day it came out. Now, that's an amazing commitment. Mm. And that shows how excited people were about this film, and I was excited too, and then I saw it.
It's not as good.
It's not worth sleeping outside on a pavement for, and I'd say it's not as good as Batman Begins. That's where the problem lies, and I had to review it for Radio Times in the week, and I gave it 3 stars. If it was out of 10, I would have given it, I don't know, 6.5, 7, something like that. You know, it's a really good film. Christopher Nolan knows how to direct a big action sequence, and it's an interesting story, but unfortunately there are sort of two interesting stories, and one of them sort of fades out, and another one picks up, and it's very muddled, I think, narratively speaking.
Very few people have said this is a terrible movie.
Or it's
this,
not terrible.
This is a bad movie. I think people are at least in agreement. In general, it's a good movie, but Mark said that it was too long. It was definitely too long.
Yeah, because you really noticed the last half an hour. I went to see it on an IMAX screen. I'd never been to an IMAX cinema before, and I was completely distracted by the IMAX. I mean, it's on at certain IMAX cinemas, so people may go and see it that way, and there are bits in it aerial shots in Hong Kong and in Gotham, which are amazing because it's like you're really there in a helicopter looking down. But nevertheless, the rest of it, I was looking up at a massive screen, 26 by 22 foot screen, and I was looking at, you know, the back of Gary Oldman's head and the front of Christian Bale's head, and I thought this is hurting my neck. So I tried to remove that experience, which was to me an unsatisfactory experience, from the actual film, and I still believe, distilled down, the film is not as good as Batman Begins.
Well, let me do some emails here. Rob in Newcastle says, he's a BA by the way, an MA,
he says, actually saying that
they have to say this now because apparently nobody would go and see, was it Mamma Mia?
Sex in the City.
Unless they had no IQ and were intensely stupid. Anyway, I just saw Dark Knight. I have to say I'm baffled by the good Doctor's downbeat review. It's got a lot of characters, but none of them are tag numbers. The role of Two-Face is critical to the whole story arc. Batman may be sidelined, but that's the point. It's called The Dark Knight, not Batman. See, I really enjoyed the story of Two-Face, and you know, is there a danger that performance by the when Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker, that he can suck the life out of good performances because he is so electric in it? Can that suck the life out of other people?
Yeah, or when he's not on screen, you miss him so much. You know, he's not on screen the whole time, obviously.
And so, to it though. I mean, he's the central character. Yeah, I mean, what do we want? Blood?
Yeah,
got blood.
Yeah, if you get that. It's really frightening. There's a scene in it where it involves a pencil. It's implied violence. You don't see the violence. I'm not one of these moral guardians, but I would say that they're very young kids. It's pretty grim for kids.
I think we're going to have to get on to reviewing some new movies.
Some new films.
It's 20 to 4. We will go back to the old Bailey soon.
Sure,
so
we will.
So let's talk about X-Files. Hold on. Colon. I want to believe.
I want to believe, and so did I, and so did you.
Yeah.
And have we got time for clips? Do you want to play a clip?
Should we play a clip first?
Let's play a little clip. See if this helps you understand what the latest X-Files episode is about.
Mulder, what are you doing?
Is it a tranquilizer that you might give a dog?
He's a phony, Mulder. He pulls these so-called visions out of thin air, and now he's got you straining to connect them.
When I see a man cry tears of blood at a crime scene he recognizes without ever having visited, I need to go out on a limb, you know what I'm saying?
Tears of blood?
At the end of the day, the clip then tells you might actually. I suppose the point of this is a massively successful television series that since it's went off air, however many years ago it was, six. Yeah. Then you've got... obviously, a whole group of people just yearning for more Mulder and Scully.
Sorry, is my microphone gone?
I have no idea why your microphone isn't faded up. But no, there it is. It's back now.
Yeah, 6 years it ended. And what they've done, cleverly, Chris Carter, who created it, has also directed this. And he's basically, the story is 6 years later. And Mulder has grown a beard, and Scully is now a surgeon. And it's sort of, they reunite for a case, which turns out, even though it begins to be about a psychic, a paedophile priest who's psychic, played by Billy Connolly. Yeah. A laugh-out-loud role for him. And he does indeed cry tears of blood. They say it in the clip, so it's true. He dies. It's a bit mysterious, but ultimately, it's not a mysterious story. And I'm not going anywhere else with the plot because that would be wrong. But it's not as mysterious and as sort of conspiracy based as the great X-Files episodes have been. So it's like a not brilliant episode of the X-Files.
That's exactly what it is. It's an average episode, and it was just slightly longer.
Yeah.
It hasn't done well commercially.
It's not. It failed very miserably at the American box office. It went in at number 4, I think, although a stiff competition. But nevertheless, you'd think an X-Files, the brand of the X-Files, would pack them in, but no. And of course, there was a lot of secrecy. No one knew what it was about. Nobody knew until we saw the screening what it was going to be about. And the production notes I was given, since I was given them, the words just disappeared. So it's just blank paper now. just blank paper. So everything's mysterious, but that's just a cloud around what not a very good film.
You know, Frank Spotnitz and Christopher Nolan, who co-wrote this together, I talked to them. Chris Carter.
Sorry.
I'm getting my Batmans and my X-Files mixed up. Chris Carter, correct. I found them very nice people to talk to.
Genius.
And exactly, a televisionary. But it had all the ingredients. It should have been great. They went back to Vancouver. That's the spiritual home. There was nobody afraid to reprise roles. Mulder wanted to be Mulder again. Scully didn't have any problems with it, you know, apart from the baby, you know, taking a few promotional days off. There was no cashing in, really. It seemed like it was all done for the right reason. So why is it not
It
should be?
I have no idea. And I think it's just simply they've told a story which is not good enough to be on a cinema screen. You know, the first X-Files movie was massive. It was bigger than an episode, wasn't it? It was this huge thing, bigger than all of us. But this is actually quite a common or garden crime mystery, ultimately.
I was expecting aliens falling from the skies.
Yes.
I was expecting, you know, all sorts of deep, dark secrets. And really, it's just about a couple, you know, with the exception of Billy Connolly's character, it's really not an X-File at all,
is it? Like Silent Witness. I've been watching a lot of Silent Witnesses again on television, and they, you know, over two nights, and they run them together now. And they're better than any. This is not as good as any Silent Witness.
All X-Files fans, though, should go and see it just for the little hidden things and the extras. Oh, look, that poster there, that picture there, the way he said something.
Look out for the names on the mobile phone, the other names on the mobile phone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Colin Murray in for Simon Mayo, and Andrew Collins here in place of the good doctor, Mark Kermode. We've done okay. We've had our top 10. We've talked about X-Files, I Want to Believe. A lot of goodwill, I think, towards it, but just not the end product. So shall we do... I want to know all, just exactly what Love Guru's like. That's got to be the one.
The Love Guru. They'll all be talking about The Love Guru. It's Mike Myers. It's the film where you go and see Mike Myers and you wonder if actually he wasn't that good in the first place. Mm. You know what I mean? You know, he's done 3 Austin Powers films and lots of other stuff, and people like him.
So let's listen to a little clip of it for you now as part of our movie. So this is Love Guru.
Who's the gift basket from, Dick?
Brad and Angelina. It says, thank you for the gift of true intimacy, but we've decided to work with Deepak instead.
What does Deepak Chopra have that I don't have?
He's been on Oprah.
Oprah!
And Oprah loves a great story. Now, take a look at this. The Toronto Maple Leafs will pay you $2 million if you can get Darren Roanoke back with his wife in time to win the Stanley Cup.
$2 million?
That's a lot of cheese.
But wait, it gets better. I spoke to Oprah's producers, and if you can restore Darren Roanoke's marriage, they guarantee that you will be on her show.
Let me get this straight. If I fix their marriage, I get on Oprah. And if I get on Oprah, I'm the next Deepak Chopra!
As a former native of Toronto, I can tell you very basically that the idea of us being in the Stanley Cup final has pushed this film into the realms of impossibility. We absolutely stank this season. So just a general, I suppose we're going to try and get through a few movies here, but just good reasons to see it, I suppose. That sounded like the worst accent ever.
Yeah, he's an American, but he's been brought up by a guru in India, so he's kind of got that weird sort of American half, it ain't half hot mum accent. And it's just... Nearly every joke in it is based around the male genitalia or an act of going to the toilet. They're basically the two main jokes, and they run through the whole film. And if you find that funny, if you find those areas of the human body hilarious, intrinsically funny, the fact that, you know, men have these things down there and that when you go to the toilet, stuff comes out, then you must go and see it.
Mike Myers, you know, so I Married an Axe Murderer, I thoroughly enjoy that movie. Yeah. And then, of course, you move into the whole Austin Powers thing. But the comments you made earlier about Eddie Murphy, could they start to apply to Mike Myers soon if it's always the one-dimensional, obvious, big budget, make the money, couple of jokes?
Well, also, you know, if you go back to his early films, the early good films, Austin Powers films, directed by Jay Roach, who went on to do Meet the Parents. This is directed by a man called Marco Schnabel. It's his first film as director. He was previously second unit director on Austin Powers. Clearly, he's not going to be saying, Mike, can we do that again and do it better? And can you be funnier in this one? I think Mike Myers is now so big that nobody's telling him, just like Eddie Murphy got, really. And I think it's problematic. And if you think the sight of two elephants having sexual intercourse is funny, again, you must see this film.
That's a really good recommend. I was going to say to you, who should go and see it? Men who would like to see two elephants have sexual intercourse.
Boys, no men. No men will go and see this film.
Okay, let's talk about Man of Wire.
Thank God, Man on Wire is the best film of the week by far, and it's a documentary, and it's about an actual thing that happened in 1974. A Frenchman walked across on a tightrope from one twin tower to the other twin tower in New York, and he actually did this. It was an act of artistic terrorism, you may say. It was a statement. Mm. He's addicted to walking on wires. He'd already walked across the Notre Dame. Yeah. He'd done the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And it was like a stunt. And this film, which is based on He Speaks, Philippe Petit, He Speaks. He's an amazing man. He's a weird, eccentric French guy. And all the other people involved in this operation, which was pretty complicated. They had to get up the towers, fire a wire across there, tighten it, while nobody knew they were there. And then first thing in the morning, 7:15, he goes out and walks. And in fact, spends 45 minutes on this wire, 1,350 feet above New York. And if it had happened now, it would never happen now, obviously, because they're not there. But even if they were, Everybody would have filmed this.
Yeah.
Nobody filmed it. There were photographs taken all the way along. So what you're watching, apart from testimony of the men who are actually there and his girlfriend, is still photographs. Yeah. But it's amazing how much vertigo can be induced by a still photograph of a man on a tightrope above, well, 1,350 feet above New York. It's a tremendous film. And it's, you know, it's just a documentary, but I think it knocks the other dramatic films into a cocked hat this week.
Any elephants involved?
No elephants whatsoever.
Man on wire, that's all you need.
Man on wire, and that's what it was written on the police report, because the police want to get him down, you know, and they're saying, come down. He walks back across the wire, back into the middle. He's got no fear, this man. He's an astonishing individual. And afterwards, this is not giving anything away, because it's not really the ending, is the actual event itself. Even though he's got a long-term girlfriend who loves him and who's interviewed on it, he is approached by an American groupie when he gets down. Basically says, I want to be the first person you have sex with since you've done this amazing thing in our city. And so he does. So he goes and has sex with a groupie just to get it out of his system. And then his girlfriend packs him in. So there's a little bit of drama as well as the high wire drama.
Okay, football movies about hooliganism. Yeah. We've had the Football Factory before. We talked to Cass Pennon today. He was on the show. It's based on his time in the ICF, yeah. West Ham.
He's definitely gone, hasn't he? He's not sitting out there.
You know what?
Listening.
I said this earlier. We were talking earlier about where to put it, and I said, let's just leave a bit of separation just in case. Yeah, he's gone. Any good?
Actually, it's an interesting story. And of course, with all of these football violence films, there's a tinge of nostalgia about the good old days when you could just have a good old punch up and kill people with a knife. That's all gone now. It's all ruined. So there's this kind of nostalgic element to it, which I find completely distasteful. But then again, I never was a football hooligan, so it's not really aimed at me. And it seems to be aimed, even though the director was saying it's aimed at lots of different people, it's not really. It's aimed at people who think football hooliganism ain't what it used to be.
Oh, so you think it glorifies football hooliganism?
It doesn't set out to glorify, but inevitably it glorifies, because it's about a bloke and a lot of other blokes who just beat up some other blokes and say the F word and the C word pretty much constantly in between. And if you find that edifying, then you should go and see it. But I don't really like Green Street, Football Factory, all the other films. The Firm, of course, is in a different class with Gary Oldman, because that told a story about a guy who was supposedly respectable and he did this thing at the weekend. Cass, the guy who plays Cass, Nonzo Anozie, is really amazing. He's an amazing, big, imposing guy, and he's got lots of moments. There are a few moments of warmth supplied mainly by him. So, you know, it's not without merit, but the actual type of film it is, no matter that it's true, no matter that it's got the racial element, which is interesting, it's still basically about whether or not you find it titillating to go and see Letterboxd fighting other blokes.
Okay. We're just about going to get through them all. Albano del Papa.
Well, I'm glad, because I watched this yesterday, and it's a really sweet foreign film. It's a Uruguayan film set in 1988 about a papal visit to this small village, and it actually happened. And the idea is all the villagers, they live in, virtually all of them live in abject poverty, and they're kind of zipping over the border to Brazil and bringing back goods and selling them. That's the kind of lifestyle they lead. And this guy, Beto, played by Cesar Troncosco, he's the centre of the story, and they decide they're going to make some money. When the Pope comes, other people will come. There'll be crowds there. So they're going to sell sausages, burgers, and he decides he's going to set up an actual flushing toilet and charge people to use it. So it's about this, you know, it's a bit like I'll think of something, you know, they're living in poverty. He said, I'll think of something. I'll use my brains, we'll think of something. So it's about that, and it's incredibly sad. It's comedic in some ways. Mm. It's very, very, it's very much a slice of Uruguayan life in 1988, which is not something I'd really thought about before. So you learn something. But unfortunately, it's potentially very depressing, as films about poverty can be.
I was right into it, though. I think it sounds fantastic. Okay, so I think we can rule out Cass and Love Guru as being films of the week for you. X-Files can probably go for Burton as well, we already know.
Yeah.
But Man on Wire, Albano del Papa, it's a choice. It's a choice.
They're both going to be a little bit harder to see than X-Files and Love Guru, which will be at every multiplex in the land. But nevertheless, if you can find Albano del Papa, go and see it. I think Man on Wire is your best bet, though. You won't see anything else like it. And also, it doesn't mention September the 11th. Mm. It's a really key thing. You think about September the 11th all the way through it, but it never mentions it. It's set in 1974. Nobody mentions it. The fact the buildings are no longer there is not mentioned. And I think that's a really, really brave and adult way of approaching it. You do your own. You make your own mind up.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.